G'day guys, it's Sammy Gordon here, your host of the Scouting Australia podcast, powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. We've got something a little different happening on the show today, guys. Jimmy's been put away, he's in the garbage bin for today's ep. We're actually going to be sharing a pizza and property episode I appeared on late last year, hosted by the big fella himself, Toddy Sloan. This episode was rated the number one downloaded podcast on the pizza and property platform ever. That's a pretty big deal. The Pizza and Property podcast is a pretty big show. It's had a couple of hundred shows. So to come in as number one was only recorded a few months ago. That's a massive deal, guys. So I had a great review and I hope you all will enjoy it. The episode that actually hit that and came in number one was a 60K income, 60K deposit, Get Me to Three Properties podcast. It really represents what's actually possible in today's market, in today's day and age starting out, and what you can do today to get yourself to three properties if you're in a similar situation like that, better or worse. It just kind of shows you that basic platform for how you can go after that goal. So if you ever needed that motivation, guys, this is a great episode to listen to. Now, guys, if you like this ep in particular, please send it on to someone you think might take some value away from it. And if you haven't left us that 5-star rating yet, but you're loving the show, then please go on and leave us that rating as well on whichever platform that you're listening to and whatever you enjoyed on too. Now, next week, Jimmy, he may be disposed and chucked back out of the garbage bin. he's going to be joining me again to deliver on our next and long-awaited installment of our standard Q&A sessions that we record monthly with all the questions sent in by you lot of legends as well. So, yeah, we're going to be recording that one for next week, guys, so make sure you're tuning in for that as well. But until then, guys, enjoy today's ep with Big Toddy Sloan himself, the Pizza and Property episode, 60K income, 60K deposit, Get Me to Three Properties. I hope you guys enjoy it.
It's time to get your property news, tips, and tricks from a different pro every week. I'm Todd Sloan, and you're listening to Pizza and Property. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Pizza and Property. My name is Todd Sloan, and today we have got a very exciting episode lined up for you guys, because if you've been looking at scaling a portfolio, not just buying one property, but how does one connect to two? How does two connect to three? That is exactly what we're going to be talking about today with someone that has scaled a portfolio from an incredibly low income, a very, very modest start to life, to something that is now worth something like $18 million, 50 plus rental properties, bringing in a massive amount of surplus cash flow every year. Now, you've probably already guessed it, but we're talking to Mr. Sam Gordon, Director of Oz Property Scout Buyers Agency. This guy is about to talk the talk, but he has absolutely walked the walk. This episode is all about how to get to the first three properties. But there's two constraints that I gave Sam. We put a lot of thought into this and he's put a lot of work into this behind the scenes. 60K income, 60K savings, get me to three properties. Now, obviously there's a lot of variables at play with this one. And as we always say, this is not financial advice. Please seek independent professional financial advice. But this is the kind of stuff that you want to take to them. You want to say, hey, I listened to that Pizza and Property podcast. They said X, Y, and Z. What do you think about that, Mr. and Mrs. Financial Advisor? And we very purposely chose $60,000 because looking at this realistically, you can actually do it with less. I did it with less. Sam actually did it with less. And when I say did it, I mean like the starting stages of everything. Is it easier to do it with more? Absolutely, it's easier to do it with more. So if you're listening to this thinking, Todd, 60 grand, I earn 100 grand or I earn 80 or 150 or whatever it is, well, fantastic. That means this is just going to be all the more fluid for you. It's going to be so much easier. It's going to be so much more straightforward. And you're going to have more options opened up to you. But for anyone else listening right now thinking, yeah, I do actually earn more like 60 grand a year. I never thought it was possible to actually build a portfolio to three properties. This is an episode you're going to want to listen to a few times. We go into a lot of detail about what kind of yields you need. What kind of price points do you actually need to be buying at? The importance in actually backing yourself. That, to me personally, that is a big one. We're also talking about locations, we're talking about diversity, but probably more importantly, talking about a few of the things that could just get you completely unstuck. So if you're serious about building wealth, you're serious about scaling a portfolio, this is one that you're going to want to listen to a couple of times. Really wrap your head around this, because there is a lot of gold in this episode. I could tell you right now, because obviously I've already recorded it with Sam, I'm doing the introduction now. I wish I had this 5 years ago. So without any further ado, let's jump into the episode with Sam Gordon right now. 60K income, 60K savings, get me to three properties. Sam Gordon, I was about to say back again and then you ran off camera. How you going?
Good, thanks, man. How you doing?
Yeah, good, mate.
Chucked a little side cough there before I came in. Quick mute, quick side cough, mate. I'm back.
I like a pro, man. Don't cough in the microphone. I like it. You know how to do it.
That's it, mate. We've done enough of these before, mate. How are you going anyway?
Yeah, good, man. It's an early morning recording today, and I like it because I'm getting back into gym sessions. I know you're very much a morning routine person, so pumped and ready to 100%. Go.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Good to see you.
Awesome, man. Well, if you want to, do you want to just jump straight into it? Because I've got a feeling that we're probably going to be chatting. There's going to be a bit of back and forth with this and a big explanation to unpack. So are you cool if I just jump straight into the first question?
Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
Awesome. Now, I've already set the premise with the introduction. But if we look at question number one, we're looking at what's the really the first step as far as finance is concerned? Who are they seeing? What are the important questions to ask? And when are they doing it?
Yes. So in terms of when are they doing it, I think when they've gotten that up to that, you know, $60,000, or they're getting quite close to it, if this is the scenario, when they're at that point, they're all good to approach someone and get started on the finance.
Okay.
I think with finance, especially people maybe who listen to podcasts like yourself as well, some people get it a little too, or they try and complicate it too much. Finance in the very early days doesn't need to be complicated. I personally would recommend not using a broker when you first start out. I'm actually a big fan of using mainstream lending when you first start. My first property was with ANZ. My next six or seven properties were all with CBA when I first started. They have, it's because you're dealing direct with the bank, you don't have to go through the same compliance and the same sort of headaches that you have to work with a broker. So when I started, and I didn't even know it really when I was doing, I was just kind of shooting from the hip. I didn't have any sort of advice, but I was fortunate that I went down that path. And I see a lot of people these days, they're going for their first property and they're going with a broker. Mm-hmm. I personally think that's more complicated than it really needs to be. I recommend mainstream lending. So like your CBAs, your NABs, things like that. They have good, quick, credit and approvals and whatnot. The valuations typically, not so much generous, but they're accurate. A lot of the time they're more accurate because their serviceability calculators aren't as huge. Like you can't borrow as crazily with them. You can still get good lending at different levels. It means they have a greater risk tolerance when it comes to vals. So your lower tier lenders, which you might be able to get a slightly better rate on, they're going to, the valuers, they will actually send out valuers and everything to go through them. And a lot of the time their valuers will price them up very sharply compared to market or if there's some cheaper sales, they'll use those cheaper sales. And that can really hurt you from a val perspective. The bigger banks have a little bit more appetite for proper market value when it comes to valuations. Mm-hmm. So you can get good. And this is the reason I say this is very, very important in these early days. You need strong valuations to be able to keep moving in the journey, or it's going to keep setting you back further and further.
And is that just as important with number one, or does that become more important with number two and three?
If you've got the serviceability, which you should, it's very, very important for those first few deals.
Okay.
Because what you want to do is build that equity base, which can then snowball. If you're getting stuck with vals, you really struggle to get past that first deal.
Okay. So if you're going to the big banks, it's going to be faster. If you're going doing that for number one, two, when does it change? When do you go like, actually time for a broker?
It's when your serviceability caps.
Okay. All right. So when you're stuck, when you reach the top of the stairs, that's when you start making a few calls.
Yeah, definitely. So we've got one banker specifically at one of the big four that we kind of refer all our first time clients to, and first and second time clients don't have complex situations. Mate, he can get a pre-approval in same day. If you get everything to him in the morning, he'll have pre-approval for you in the afternoon. When you go for formal approval, you'll get it within a couple of business days. When you need to run your vals, you run them super quick, good solid market val. Mate, it is the ultimate way to build a portfolio quickly and easily at the start is not going to a broker, is going mainstream lending.
And just for anyone listening right now thinking, oh yeah, same day, that's not a big deal. That's a huge deal. That is insanely quick. And I know that 2021 was a bit of a different time, but I remember getting pre-approval. I think it took almost 3 months at one stage. It was insane.
I remember.
Yeah,
it was crazy, man. Crazy. And it wasn't just you, it was across the board. People running with you, with lower tier lenders or even maybe stuff. I remember the stuff you were going through. It wasn't as if you were working with the bottom of the barrel. They were still decent lending. But the turnaround time frames. And it's because a lot of time the bank, the brokers, I feel to be a little bit sorry for them, have to go through that the credit, and they have to go through all their compliance and whatnot. And that takes process, that takes time. And the banks don't prioritize that. They prioritize what comes through internally.
Yep.
That gets approved the quickest, and then everything else has to go through compliance. So it's just a process. But yeah, mate, in COVID, it was 90, 120 days sometimes for pre-approvals. They were crazy. ANZ in the peak of it, if you submitted an application, because all their call centers were in the, I think it was in the Philippines, all their call centers got smashed by COVID, and then they had the tsunami. It was 6-8 months to get an approval. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and hold times of the banks got a bit out of control. I remember thinking of a CommBank fitness challenge of how far can you run whilst being on hold to the CommBank call center. Anyway. So as far as where are you going? You're going directly to the bank. As far as when you're doing it, you're basically doing this once you've got your deposit together. Like, don't go when you've got zero in the bank. You need to be at least like somewhat ready. And as far as what to ask, even though you're not going to a broker, you're going to the bank, do you still want to tell them, hey, look, I want to scale, I want to do this? You're asking the same, having the same kind of conversation?
Probably not. Like, it's great to get the idea of serviceability, but something, and I know I'm just having a quick squeeze over your questions before we jump into this. It was, how do you do this? And obviously stretching your 60 grand deposit as far as you can. We're not looking to absolutely maximize serviceability. And this is the mistake that a lot of people make when they first start. The bank goes, oh, you can borrow 600,000. And they go out and they go, all right, mad. Well, let's go. And they go to the top of their budget and they absolutely smash their budget with their first deal. They get a terrible yield. They might pay market value. And then you stop in your tracks. The best and the easiest way to do it is buy what you need within the portfolio that's going to allow you to go to the next one. So look at your serviceability, Matt. I got 600 grand with these guys, let's say at a 5% yield. But then if you go out and buy something at 300, 350 with a 6.5% yield, you're increasing that. You're enabling yourself to buy more and having a bit more serviceability with them as well, and not capping yourself on your first deal.
Okay, so whatever you do, unless you're getting something with like an absolutely insane yield, do not go to your full serviceability.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Anything else you want to cover off on the finance before we jump into the next slide?
No, I think we're good.
No, cool. All right. And as far as entities concerned, again, knowing that you're wanting to build to three, are you talking to an accountant? Are you putting in trust companies? What are you doing?
No, for me, mate, it's 100%. That's personal names. You want to maximize personal name. You got your land tax thresholds within your personal name that are very generous. As soon as you go into trust, you have the trust in company structure costs, which are a setup cost. For one, you don't have all that much money to begin with, so you've got this additional cost. You almost immediately trigger land tax as soon as you enter trust, depending on state, but most states you trigger it immediately. And then you have that ongoing cost for it as well. It is way too much. Like, you do not need to do it when you first start out. Depending on how you build the portfolio and where you're building it and different opportunities, because if you start building it at a certain state, once you max that out, then yes, it makes sense to go across. Mm-hmm. But for the first three properties, no. I very, very strongly believe you won't need to go into trust and you should just be doing them in personal name. It's also a much quicker, easier process again. So if you're doing, like, for your finance piece, when you have to go through the accounting and setting that up, the finance piece takes longer as well. And it's not as straightforward. When people are starting out, it's you want to make it as streamlined and smooth as possible, because your first couple of deals, and mate, I'm sure you can relate to this. Your first couple of deals, it's a bit of a headache and you've got to get used to it, right? Like, property investing is one of those things that it's like a video game, right? Like, a lot of people hear this analogy, you level up as you go. You don't want to go in on your first deal and try to go to level 10 when you're a level one investor. You don't, because that's just too overcomplicated. And by the time you finish your first deal, your head's going to explode and you never want to do it again, right? So you want to go, the simple, straightforward process that works. And that's it.
So this is really about building that foundation and not overcomplicating things.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So personal name, no trust, no companies, don't get too creative. Just keep it nice and simple and build that foundation solidly. All right, anything else you wanted to add into that?
No, mate. No, I think you hit the nail on the head, like building the foundation. That's what your first three deals, that's what it should really be looking like. Like, to me, first three deals, especially with this deposit and this income, it's how do I build to $1 million base? So like three properties that'll equate to around about $1 million. How do I do that from the first three? Yeah, definitely that, mate. Keep it simple, build the foundation, do your mainstream stuff, and you'll get the easiest way to do it.
All right, cool, man. And what's property number one looking like? How's this all starting?
So property number one, mate, I think the big thing here, and we had a little quick chat on this before we jumped on, a bit of a discussion, because you're like, how are you going to run into it? And it's a funny thing, because I think it really depends on the skill set and the time availability and I guess the willingness to do this yourself. Mm-hmm. And it is a genuine consideration. When I first started out, I did it all myself. I had a lot of time to put into it and research, and I went and did my own renos, and it really paid off for me. But I had the time. I had the willingness to do it. I was a pretty good negotiator. I got on really well with people, so I could build relationships and kind of, create that, which allows you to get really good deals. And yeah, so it all made sense for me to do it. So I think this is where, like, even before you dive into the first deal, because actually this is another mistake a lot of people make, Todd, is They go get everything in place. They save their 60 grand. You know, it takes them 3 years to save 60 grand. Mate, I know it took me 3 years to save my first 35 grand for my first deposit. As soon as I got that money, I was chomping at the bit. I was so keen to buy something. That is what you've got to be really careful of. Don't get your 60 grand, get your pre-approval and go buy the first property, say on the weekend sort of thing. Like, take your time with it. And yeah, you've got to really weigh up those abilities that you either do or you don't have. And you've got to be honest with yourself, because your first property is the most important. So it's the hardest one to get, because you're literally saving for that entire first deposit. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest one to get. This needs to be like, I don't know how I'm married, but it needs to be a very good deal to allow you and help you get into that second deal as quickly as possible. If you're looking to scale it quickly, and this is where, again, it all comes into, it's all a personality type. Like, if you're looking just to do one a year, that's where it kind of really comes into a personality type. But I'll run you through a couple of little scenarios and examples that kind of popped up in my mind after I read this. And I was going for a run this morning. I was thinking about while I was running. It was all kind of working in my head, like different scenarios.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the first one, which is really key, and the reason I want to run into this too, man, is because it really runs, it flows into the other deals. Like, decisions you make on the first one, you got to figure out like what your ability is and whether you're doing this yourself or you're getting help. First thing for me is like, where are you? Sorry, were you going to ask a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you say doing this yourself or getting help, are you talking about help as far as BA is concerned, or help as far as renovation, development, like the actual strategy itself, or all of it?
The main thing I'm probably referring to is buyer's agent.
Okay.
So I did this all myself when I first started.
Yep.
I look at what I buy for clients now that are in their 20s, some of them in their teens, and I look at what I bought and what I started with. And I did well, but like what I'm buying for clients that are that age and putting their money to work with, it was far superior to what I bought for myself, even so far as like the asset type. So I only had enough to buy a $275,000 property, right? Mm-hmm. So I went and bought a unit in Wollongong. It did really well, like over that period. And I got lucky because of the timing of where I bought. If I was based in Brisbane instead of Sydney, and this was in 2009, right? I was 19 years old. If I was based in Brisbane or even potentially Melbourne or somewhere else, and I'd gone and bought that same property in one of those markets, like a unit in that market, it would have taken me about 15 years in Brizzy to have seen a decent return on my money if I'd bought it at that time. I got lucky in that I lived in Sydney, mm-hmm. and I bought in Sydney in a market that was gentrifying and upcoming. And the thing doubled in 7 years. But if I bought in one of those other markets, it would have been a massive mistake to have bought that same property in a different market. If I'd used someone like myself at that time and we'd gone and I still would have bought in Sydney for sure. Mm-hmm. Because Sydney was like, it was starting to bottom out. It was starting to turn around. There's nowhere really looking better. Like, looking back now, having a look at it, nowhere really better. That was probably the option. Would I have bought a unit? No, I probably wouldn't have. Was there better options for houses? Yes, like it definitely for that budget, you could have gone into like Southern or Western Sydney and bought a house sub 300,000. I would have made a lot more money. But it all comes down to what you're willing to do with it as well. Still did well out of it, but that's where I think the really big thing is location. So, and this is where you've got to back yourself or be able to do enough research to be confident that you're buying in the right location. And this again comes down to, if you live in Melbourne or you live in Sydney, you know, and let's say the next best place is to buy, like Brisbane's still got some opportunities and Queensland, you know, you got Perth, you got Adelaide, you got a few different options there. Are they too far away for you to be able to confidently learn that market, make some connections, and actually be able to make sure that you buy the right property at the right price? And even like, let's say if we talk about Perth, are you picking the right market within Perth to buy in, or Adelaide or Brizzy or regional Queensland? Yeah, there's a lot of different factors there to make sure you get right. If you've got the time to put into it and to research it and to get it right, then back yourself and go have a crack and go and do it. And if you're, you know, a young fella or lass and you're willing to go out there and do a bit of work and put some elbow grease into these things as well, you know, you can obviously save yourself a bit of money on, say, a BA fee and instead put that into a reno. But again, it comes down to opportunity cost, because if a BA can save you 20 to 30 grand more than what you could buy it for yourself, and then you're going out there and putting all that work in to get the same return, again, that's where it comes to working it out. And by the way, man, I want to be clear, like I'm not jumping on this to obviously push ourselves with BAs or anything like that. It's just something to realistically weigh up. A lot of people make the mistake of going out and buying that first property themselves. And if you get that first one wrong, you don't make money in it, or you buy in the wrong market. Like I was saying, if I was in Brisbane and I bought the wrong property up there, I wouldn't be having this conversation because I wouldn't be in the same position that I'm in. So it is a very important important thing to take into account.
Absolutely. And I understand what you mean. As much as you're a BA, and I know that there's obviously a certain level of bias to it, I think there's still a shitload of truth to what you're actually saying though as well. Like the amount of people when I was a sales agent that I would sell like apartments to that were pretty close to off the plan kind of apartments.
Yeah.
And they just felt like it was such a good idea because it was like, oh, it's located in the city or it's right next to here. And the investor in me was just like, this is terrible. But it's what they wanted. But it's what they wanted because it's what they thought they were right because they didn't know any better. And I think that's where having someone in your corner that does know better, it's going to go a long way realistically. But something else I just wanted to quickly touch on then with property number one, when you're talking about that, like sort of adding value and things along those lines, does this strategy of really getting to three, does it actually consist of a bit of elbow grease, like doing some renos, or how's it actually unfolding?
Well, again, this is where it depends. And that's why I think it comes down to two different avenues. You go down the avenue of employing someone else and getting the assistant. And the idea of going down that avenue, if I was a first-time investor, I would want them, let's say whatever their fee was, I would want them to be doubling their fee on the way into a deal, right? So I'd be wanting to make sure I was getting into the right location, and whatever their fee was, I'm making that and that again on a deal on the way in.
Yeah, okay.
Because they're putting you in the right location, you're going to keep getting the growth. Because you've made that discount on the way in, it's made it worthwhile.
Yep.
If you're not going to go down that path and you're going to back yourself, like I did, to be honest, I actually didn't even know what a buyer's agent was when I first started. but like, let's say you go down the avenue and you back yourself.
Yep.
You're going to be making sure you're picking the right market. And there's two things here, but I probably would be pushing, if you're going to save yourself the money of not going down a BA fee, yes, look for a property that you can do a bit of value add on. A lot of the time, the best deals that you're going to be able to pick up are those that are aesthetically unpleasing to the eye, right? In other words, the shitters, the ugly ducklings, the things that you walk in and you go, I wouldn't want to live in this thing, right? Or your missus says that to you.
Yeah.
They're the sort of properties you want to look for. And then you can go in and go, yeah, it looks like shit. But realistically, all it is it's been left looking like a dump by a tenant that exited. The things may be gone stale, or it might be a deceased estate or something. You know, it's got tatty, crappy looking carpets, or it's got scratched up old floorboards. Paint looks terrible. Kitchen's cosmetically tired. Could I save my money from the BA fee and go and put it into something like this? Refloor it, give it a full repaint. Can I cosmetically tart up the kitchen? Mate, I know I did that on my first Wollongong unit for about $1,000 and a few late nights of, you know, sending myself high with this, these different paints that are the high gloss enamel paints and stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can stretch like a budget really far by doing stuff like that. If you got that ability, the return on doing something like that, it could definitely like outweigh that difference between what you should be able to get from the expert advice of using a BA as well. So I think they're the two avenues that you got to make the decision of what you want to go down.
Okay.
And I think, it really comes down to locality and where you're based and where you want to buy as well. Because like if we're talking about someone on the East Coast and you think Perth's the best option for you, if you've got to make three trips over to Perth, you know, flights, that's car hire, that's hotel hire, Perth isn't a cheap place to fly to. Or if you're in Perth and you want to go buy in, you know, if you're in the Eastern state, the Western states or even South Australia, and you want to go buy maybe regional Queensland or something, again, they're not cheap flights to make. So if you've got to make multiple trips there, again, you've got to weigh those decisions up, car hire, hotel hire, away from work as well. They're all different things you've got to kind of weigh up into the equation. But that's where locality comes into it. If you're strategically based in an area or near an area that you think will have a lot of growth, like for me personally, when I was first building out my portfolio, I did a bit in Adelaide. I bought multiple properties in Adelaide. I bought multiple properties in Brisbane. And what I used to do was I used to take a week off work and I'd take it as annual leave. I'd leave on a Friday arvo, I'd stay there and renovate for an entire week, and I'd come back on the Sunday to Sunday, and then I'd start work. So I'd take a full week off and fully cosmetically renovate it myself.
Would you drive or fly?
Drive. I mean, I'd load up the ute with everything. And that's why, again, strategically positioned, like it's not close, but Sydney to Brizzy was, say, 11 hours. Sydney to Adelaide's a little bit further, but I can take all my tools. So say if I had paint or something left over from a previous job, I could take all that with me as well. Yeah, man. So it's like it is a good way to do it. If you're hands-on, you can force that value yourself as well.
And just in case anyone's listening right now thinking, can you guys start talking about the first property? Like this is so important, this foundation of what Sam's talking about, especially if you're going to actually be able to force some value into it yourself. Do you have the skill set to do that? Do you have the work ethic to do that? Like ask yourself these really honest questions, or not really honest, but ask yourself these really important questions, but be really honest with the answers. Just because you enjoy watching the block doesn't actually mean you're going to enjoy renovating. They're very different things.
Yeah.
But on the property side though, what are we looking at as far as the spend's concerned for property number one?
Yeah, definitely, mate. So either way of whichever avenue you went down with, say the $60,000 deposit, I think it's important to not put the whole amount into the first deal.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is keep leaving yourself a bit of a buffer. The buffer's for two things, but you always want to have a bit of a buffer when you're investing. It's not intelligent to not have that. You always need that little bit of a fail safe there as well. But it's also that little bit closer to getting into the next deal. So you don't want to fully exhaust all your funds on that first property. What I probably would do would be looking to invest around at that sort of money with that sort of deposit, probably the high 200s to low $300,000 market, call it circa 280 to 320. What I would be looking to do, sorry, about ask a question.
No. I'm just writing down here. But it's funny you say that because I was actually just thinking. As far as 280 to 320, I know that I can quite confidently say we've probably just lost half the audience right now going, whatever, Sam, 280 to 320 doesn't exist, mate. Like I know we can't go down to exact like micro locations.
Yeah, of course.
But can you give us a little bit of a window as to where that's even slightly possible?
So all the locations I said before, excluding Brisbane,
okay,
Adelaide, Metro Adelaide,
yep,
Metro Perth, regional, certain parts of regional New South Wales are getting skinnier, but regional Queensland, 100%. There are multiple cities and locations within those that you can easily source in and around those brackets. I've got clients on the books that we've bought for under 230, like 220 to 230,000, and the properties aren't worth that, right? Like they're 250, 260 properties, but we're buying them that cheap. They're 100% there and they're available. You've got to look a little further than Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane. You know what I mean? Like you've got to, and this is again where it comes down to, you've got to put the time and the research into finding the right locations and then learning those locations like the back of your hand. Because it's like, this is a super important part. And that's why I was going into what I was saying before, because if you put the time into finding it, you 100% can find it. But it could take you 3 months to find the right spot and the right location, somewhere that you're comfortable to actually invest in and go, yeah, you know what? I've read everything up on it. I'm researching it. You know, all these different things I'm reading and listening to sound like this is the place to go. There's 3 months, right? Potentially 3 months to find the right place.
Yep.
Because if you're not doing it full time, you're going to be hard to find it in a weekend or two, right? Then you've got to put another 3 months into learning the pricing of that market. And I'm not kidding. Do not go and buy something in your first week or two of looking at properties, because I guarantee you're going to look back in 3 months and go, fuck, I just made a mistake. That was the wrong thing to buy. I just paid too much. You cannot learn market value in a couple of weeks. It will take you 3 months because you need to see what's coming on and what's selling, and you need to see what's selling in certain pockets. And that's where it really comes to learning a market really intricately. That's how you learn market value. Seeing sales, seeing properties get listed, seeing what they're selling for, speaking to all the different agents, getting boots on the ground, speaking to different agents, hearing from them and property managers, like what are these different pockets and what are these different areas like? That's what you need to do to be able to get yourself really, really good deals. So I can guarantee you, mate, that bracket there, like even if you wanted to go as far as of spreading your search from 250 to 350, because that's what you can buy realistically with a $60,000 deposit or working capital, you can definitely buy up to 350. I just personally would recommend not going quite that high on your first deal, leaving a little bit in the kitty to play with.
Okay, makes perfect sense, then. So, you know, roughly where, as far as like a few sort of broader sort of brushstrokes as to what to look into. Looking at not buying a unit, if you can actually get a house, like you said, better kind of quality asset, you might be pushing some sweat equity into this as well. As far as the finance is concerned, we already know you're speaking to a bank, to put it in your own name. We're not going through the trusts and anything like that. What's the next step? Let's say we've found this property. It's 280 grand. It's 300 grand. It's an absolute cracker. Know the area really well. We've got it under contract. Where are we going from here?
So I think the main thing, just before we do that as well, the main thing to learn to understand here, and as like we were saying before about learning your market, and the real key for this scenario that we're talking about in this podcast is how do we get to three properties?
Yeah.
You have to make sure you're making a discount on the way.
Okay.
So you're going to go and put the effort in and you're going to go and do this. Learn the market intricately because you need that discount, because you need that equity uplift that you're going to get from the bank to pull that capital to get into the next deal. And the reason why I say maybe don't go all the way to 350 or spend the full 60 is if you leave $10,000 in the kitty and you can go and make 20 to 25, let's say you make 20 grand and then you go and put 5 or 10,000, just give it a cosmetic facelift, and your 20 turns into 30,000 from it, like excluding what you've put into it, right? Like you make an extra, let's say you put 10 in, but an extra 20 grand on equity. We take 10 out of it and you've essentially made the extra 10. So your 20 turns into 30. Okay? Does that make sense? Sorry, I said that a little. Make sense?
Yeah, I've got you, but let's walk through it again, just in case.
Okay, so let's say you're buying it for a $20,000 discount. You've already got your 20 grand in there.
Yep. So
you
just
put $10,000.
So just so we got some numbers. So you reckon it's worth 300, but you picked it up for 280.
Yep.
Yep.
And then let's say you put $10,000 into it.
Yep. Okay.
But then it gets valued at 320. So your 280 cost base or purchase price actually goes up to 290 because you put 10 into it.
Yep.
But then your value goes from 300 to 320. So you've got $30,000 equity there, not 20.
Gotcha.
You've made that little bit extra. Yeah, perfect. Sense. So the whole idea of that, obviously, you make the money on the way in. You force a bit of value with some sweat equity. Mm-hmm. You've got your $30,000 equity uplift. The key to this as well is making sure you're in the right market. Because if you're in the right market, in 6 to 12 months' time, that 320 property should be 350 or above.
Yep.
That's really key. That's really crucial. Both of those points: right market, right price. If you're doing it yourself, you're doing your sweat equity, you're trying to get a bit of extra value out of it as well. The key to that whole thing there is getting that $30,000, getting that revalued at the 320, pulling that capital back out. So pulling that 30, or it might be, let's say 90% of the 30,000, so that's 27 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you put $50,000 to $55,000 into that deal and you just pulled $27,000 out as a 90% equity release of that 30,000 uplift, that is 50% towards the next deposit. Right?
Gotcha. Yep.
Now, if you also left $10,000 in the kitty, like I was saying, instead of spending the 60, you spend the 50. Your 27 is actually 37.
Yep.
And when you're at 37, if you needed 50 grand to get in that deal, you're only $13,000 away from your next deposit to be able to buy your next property.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
So let's say it might take you, if you're making that much money, you know, and it took you, however long it took you to save the $60,000 in the first place. This is where it's really important to note as well. If you want to do this quickly and build it as quickly and force it as hard as you can and really run this thing hard, the way that you and I built ours, you've got to understand you've got to be chipping in your own money. You've got to keep saving. You know, if you've got a little side hustle, make a bit extra money, put as much as you can back into this, because the quicker you can compound this and snowball this into multiple properties,
mm-hmm.
the quicker that compounding effect of all the growth across all of them starts to lift up. And yeah, you're not getting 10% growth on a 300 grand asset. You're getting 10% growth on a mill because you've got, you know, three of them in the portfolio and building, blah, blah, blah.
Also, you just said, sorry to jump in there, Sam, but it also depends on the market. Like you might have actually got that reval at 340, 350. You don't need to save for another 6 months, 12 months. It's like now you've got more than your 60K.
But this is where it comes down to, right? Let's say the bank doesn't take into account the extra growth in that. Because this is the multiple scenario. And this is where it gets very easy once you get past 2, 3, 4. If you get the first one and two right, it starts to snowball and compound. So even if you got that 37 out and you had to save the extra, you know, 13, 15, whatever it is to get into the next one. That's what I'm saying. People have to be realistic here that it's quite often the case where you need to save that little bit extra to get into the next deal. And that's just a mindset that you have to be willing to, or I'm going to put in, you know, a really hard 12 to 24 months to keep saving deposits and saving capital to chip in here. And then by the time I've got my three properties, it's going to start snowballing and I can just keep stripping capital and going from there as well.
Yeah.
But if we went through that scenario, you've equity released the 27, you've got the extra 10,000 left over in the kitty. 6 months later, you've saved an extra 13. Then, but you are right. If you're waiting 3 months post settlement, there could be some additional equity there from the growth, which you should have had. Yep. By buying in the right market. But let's just say that's the scenario. And then 6 months later, you save that extra bit of money and you go and buy property number two.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we're up to property number two, right? So I can run into this.
Just before we actually do go to property number two, what kind of a yield do we need to get on this? Because I'm assuming if you're getting like a 4% yield, the wheels are falling off pretty quick.
Yeah, sorry, Matt. That is a very, very important note. At those price brackets, I would and your serviceability levels and everything, I would definitely be aiming for 6% plus yield as you're kicking off and starting out.
Yep.
And in all those areas I was talking about, you can still 100% find properties in those price brackets and getting 6% plus yield.
And can I just chime in with something that I'm sure Sam will echo as well? Just in case if you do start looking Adelaide, Perth, Brizzy, wherever you're looking and you're like, hold on a second, now I can't see these 6% yields. There is a lot of property at the moment that if it's tenanted, it is drastically under rented. Like I've seen a few unit blocks. I've got a mate of mine that's looking at buying a unit block now. And on the books, the one that he was looking at is like a 5.8% yield. But realistically, market value rents, it's more like a 7, almost 8% yield. So don't get turned off when you see the listing and think, oh no, well that's rubbish. That's not true. Look a bit deeper.
Yeah, and a lot of the time you can actually get a better deal from that as well. And again, this is where it comes into learning your market, understanding what things are worth, and taking your time with that as well. Because when you understand that and you learn it, and you may even find listings that go stale because owner occupiers don't want to buy it because there's 8 months left on a lease And then investors don't want to buy it because it's pulling a 4% yield in an area that should be 6%. The seller shot himself in the foot trying to look after his tenant. And he's going to, if he needs to sell, he's going to have to take a hit on that to get rid of it, because most people won't pick something up like that. But if you look at it and you've got 6 months to go on a lease and it's renting for $50, $60 a week under, 6 weeks of that is only, 6 months of that's probably only $1,500, but he may not be able to sell it. He may be super stressed and he may take a really, really good haircut on that. So that's definitely some good opportunity. Man, that's a really, really good point on that as well.
Cool. So we're looking at 6% plus yield. And what are we looking at then for property number two? If we've stripped out the equity, we're ready to go again.
Yeah, property number two, if you are going it alone and probably potentially even you know, if you're using a band that since you've had good success, I would be replicating it in the same area, the same market. So if the market hasn't exploded and you've done it, you've bought in the right area, but it hasn't exploded yet, it might have picked up a little bit. All the time and effort and energy and research and everything that you put into finding that first deal, I would be replicating that. Like I would be utilizing what you've learned there. You've probably spoken to most of the agents, or you should have spoken to most of the agents in the area. You should have a pretty good understanding of values of that property type. I would literally be looking to replicate deal number one in deal number two. If anything, trying to get a better deal, because you should know that market even better at that point, and hopefully build some good connections as well.
Yeah, start pestering a few agents for off-market deals if you can get your hands on.
That's it.
Okay. All right. So we're looking at literally doing the same kind of thing, either getting it like well below market value, getting it slightly below market value, forcing a bit of equity there through renovation, making sure that there's a solid yield at least that 6% sort of mark there. Yeah, I guess property number two, we're going through pretty quick. Is there anything else you wanted to add on to property number two?
Nah, because it's like, that's why we went into very detailed information on property number one, because you can replicate it into property number two, because you've already done the research, you've understood it, you should know what it is. Most people, mate, I'm sure you're probably the same, when you buy your first couple of properties or you buy any properties, you always keep your eye on the market after that, because you want to see what things are worth in that area. So really, over that next 6 months, your knowledge of that area and market value should be building. So I would definitely replicate. That's something that I always did in my own portfolio. I bought in Adelaide first. When I bought my, I'm sorry, not first, but four or five properties in. Yeah, after Wollongong, after a couple of little builds as well. I went and bought down there, and I bought 1 month apart. So I bought one in the northern suburbs, and then 1 month later or 6 weeks later, I went down for a pre-settlement inspection on it and stayed there for, it was pretty much a week, inspecting and looking at more properties, and bought another one because I had to, in the next suburb over, because I knew that market so well and I've been looking at them so diligently. I think that was my fourth trip down. So a lot of the agents knew me as well. So I was able to actually snag that one off market as well. That was, that was the second deal down there. Then after I bought those two, 12 months later, I was buying up in Brizzy because I stripped the capital out of those ones. And I was like, all right, next market, diversified. I went up to Brizzy and again, literally bought the first one. And then when I was up there renovating the first one, there were these ones I'd been working on when I went up, and it went super stars listing, and I absolutely smashed this dude. And bought it literally, again, same thing a month later. Knew the market intimately. Exactly what it was worth, bought it very, very under market value, and stretched those resources of knowing that market as well as I did.
Just in addition to what you're saying there on staying in the same market as well for number two, something that you said to me a little while ago, this is an off-air conversation, around the importance of especially if you're going to scale and go 10, 20, 30, if you're listening to this right now, you've got big dreams. Something that Sam pointed out to me is keeping more of them sort of tightly together in a similar location as well means that you can actually have the benefit of not having 50 bazillion property managers to actually call. If you've got one property manager that's in Adelaide and they're taking care of three of your properties for you, and then you go over to Brizzy and then you've got one in Brisbane that's taking care of three, four, five, whatever you're building, it's a lot better than you've got one all the way down south in Adelaide, one that's out bush somewhere, one that's in, and because I did that, like I can completely put my hand up
and it's a headache.
It's so annoying. Yeah.
I get you, man. Yeah, dude, I remember. Yeah, we chatted about this recently, because I think you'd ask me, and I get asked all the time. It's like people ask me, they go, because I'm up to 40 properties now, right? So I got 40 properties, and multiples of those have additional dwellings or two or three, one or two, sorry, extra builds on them. So I'm over 50 rentals from 40 odd properties, right? And they go, how do you deal with like so many headaches and all this bullshit? And I think this is where the conversation came up with us. And that term that I use for that is clustering. So you cluster properties in certain areas because you know it so well. So many people love to diversify for the sake of diversity. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it's wrong. I prefer that you put all that research into an area to become a market expert at that area. Why throw that in the bin to then go and try and find somewhere else? if you backed yourself enough, that was the right area to buy in. Double down on it, buy another one in there, you know, push the relationships you've already got in that area to really maximize it. And exactly like you said, mate, then you've got it. You should have a good property manager from the first one. And then you can utilize that for, you know, obviously for the second one as well. And again, you've got that one property manager across two properties. You're in a market in an area that you're confident in. You should have already had a nice reval. So the process has worked to get you into property number two. Mm-hmm. Bang, let's go.
Love it. Okay, man. And as far as property number three is concerned, I've got this feeling you're going to say just do the same thing again, or does it change?
No. I love the idea of doubling down. I think that's completely fine. I wouldn't roll a dice on all three in the same location. The other point on that as well is you should have bought in the right area. So the market should be moving. Like, let's say you're into, you know, 6 months after you bought, so 3 6 months, say, after you bought the first one, you've revalued both of them. You've pulled another 30 or 40 grand out of the both of them because you should have bought in the right area that had that sort of, you know, that sort of growth in that sort of time frame. It's not a bad thing to move on to a different area in that time. But this is where you can spend that time after you've bought the second one, really researching, going, all right, where's going to be my next hunting ground? Remember I said earlier, it takes 3 months it might not take you 3 months on this time to find the right market, but you want to be tossing up and assessing different markets. I'm doing it all the time, mate. I'm always assessing different markets. It's the right time to enter and whatnot. You should be assessing those different markets. Find a couple that you want to, that you like, or if there's one in particular that you really like, it will take you another 3 months to learn that market intimately as well. Spend that time learning the market. And if it works, the only thing on this one as well is if we're going into a different area, if you did sweat equity and did, you know, elbow grease on this, we might be going to a very, very different part of the country. Okay. You know, so like where I was talking earlier, Sydney, kind of like halfway between Adelaide and Brisbane, is, you know, 10, 11 hours to Brisbane, about 13, 14 to Adelaide. But it was okay for young Sam to be going around, driving around, mm-hmm. ute loaded to the max and doing all that. But if we're going further, if we're doubling that or whatever, like, or if you're in Melbourne and you bought the first one in Adelaide or Perth, or first two in Adelaide or Perth, and now you're going to go regional Queensland, we're talking like a 30-hour drive, right? Like, it's too far. And even when you're flying, have you got enough tools that you can take with you? And you can. I've done this before. I've loaded up a suitcase with tools, kept it under 25 kilos, or paid the extra weight for it and taken that with me. So you can do it. But it's really something you need to weigh up on that one. Do you think you've learned how to buy well enough below market that you maybe don't need to do the value add on this one? Or did you have a great enough result from those first two that you still want to do it and you're willing to do it that little bit further away as well?
Okay. All right. So you're diversifying into another market. Also, as far as it might not take you 3 months this time, that something that you're making me think of, and I was racking my brain trying to think of who said this, and I can't remember, but it was about you can do all the numbers in the world of where you're going to be in 5 years, 10 years, all the rest of it. But the thing that a lot of people forget is if you really stick to it, you don't usually take into account how much of a weapon you're going to be after 5 years, 10 years of actually learning, doing and growing. So even though we're talking property number three, it's an incredible accomplishment, but it might not be full weapon stage just yet, but it's surely going to work a lot differently from property number one when you were still just like putting the runners on and trying things out.
Yeah, definitely. It's a funny thing too though, Todd, because different people learn through the process what they can and can't handle. Some people love it. They love the chase. They love the fight. You know, they love the battle with agents. They love the chase in terms of finding the right area and doing all the research. Man, I used to love that. The amount of time and effort. And it's funny because like I come from like a laboring tradie sort of style background. Mm-hmm. I'm an athlete. And look, I wasn't really like the biggest, you know, book smart sort of dude out there. But looking into it and doing the research and finding all the different little, the intricate little things that showed me why a market worked for me. I love that, right? So I love that chase of that. And then I love the battle of negotiating with an agent. But a lot of the time I'd fly down there and create a relationship with them first. So then it was a battle that was like, yeah, I enjoyed them. I really enjoyed it. A lot of people don't like that. A lot of people, because they kind of see it as confrontation, especially when you get pissed off agents who tell you to shove it up your ass because you're throwing a low ball offer. Because realistically, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to pick things up for cheap.
And it happens.
90% of agents don't like that. You probably didn't like that, you know, being an agent. But you would have respected it from the investor side.
Yeah.
But you don't want to take that offer to the seller as well, right?
Yeah, unless it's been sitting around for ages and I needed it to educate them and be like, come on, here's reality now. This is what happens.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And you've got to be prepared to take those hits as an investor if you're wanting to do this, to have the uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, Yeah. And it's that age-old saying of you have to be, you know, you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. It really comes down to it when you're throwing those offers in. Even I felt a bit awkward when I first was throwing in my first, you know, quite low offers. It's all part of it. You can either hack it or you can't. And it, but you'll find out on that first deal whether you can do it or not. One of the biggest mistakes ever, and that almost all first-time investors make and buyers make, is they think the agent's your friend. Mate, an agent is a professional negotiator. They do that 6 days a week. They literally are there to play you and to get absolute top dollar food for your for their seller. There's a minute amount of them that kind of are happy to work the other way and really try and work with you to get the best price. But a lot of the time, they're still decent agents. They're still trying to get the top dollar, but they might just be trying to, you know, get that one property sold. So you have to kind of pick and choose, and that's where you are. That's where you kind of learn that. And yeah, just don't think every agent's your friend just because they're nice and lovely on the phone and in person and stuff. You got to work it to get the great deals.
The amount of people that I'd work with as buyers and naturally working for my seller when I was doing it, and they would think that I was actually being paid by them. Like, it's like, well, we buy the house and that's what pays your commission, so you're working for us. It's like, no, that's not how it works. Like,
so, yeah, that's exactly what I do. So paying $500 for this 40-foot, you're getting a steal. You're getting a steal.
Oh, God. All right, so just recapping everything. So basically, we're getting property number one. We're stripping out the equity, making sure that it's around that kind of high twos to low threes. We're replicating it in the same area for property number two. Now, property number three, we're choosing a different area, still doing the research. If you've found out that now you've done one or two renos, you're going, yeah, okay, this has been pretty good. I do like it. Well, maybe stick with the same strategy, different area. Or if you've had good success with a BA, if you've gone down that route, maybe stick with the same BA because why change your winning formula? But after number three, like basically, is there anything else we're kind of wrapping up with that? Or do we just go, holy crap, I've just achieved it. I've got three properties now.
Well, now once you get to number three, now it's time to set some goals, you know, to set some goals of what you really want to do and kind of how far you want to push this thing as well. Because some people think they'll love the process and then don't. Because investing, it's not the easiest thing in the world, right? Especially when you're buying, you know, $300,000 properties, there's different things that pop up. You're going to have, you have tenants, you have maintenance, all these different things. And that's what I was saying before, like you level up as an investor. And different people get to that point and they go, you know what, and they look at it. You know, I've done strategies before and whatnot. You work with a BA, you might work out, all right, well, here's the game plan to get to 100, 120,000. Let's just hit that because I don't want to go too crazy because I don't actually love the day-to-day of owning a property. Mm-hmm. I can say to you as well, quite honestly, like I said, yeah, over 50 rentals. Day-to-day for me isn't a headache. I might get one or two calls a week across that many properties. You've handled it intelligently, like a, you know, from a business sense, because that's what it essentially is. But you need to grow to that level to be able to look at it from that. And some people don't have that kind of initially. So that's the way, I guess, you can work it up to that point and figure out how far do I want to go with this. And other people, like they love it, they thrive on it, they really enjoy the process, they love the money that they've made on it. They go, you know, I'm now sitting on $1 million portfolio. If we have 10% of growth this year, we might have a nice run. Like a lot of people have had great runs over the last couple of years. They had $1 million portfolio, might have made $400,000 or $500,000 in that time frame, just from growth over 2 years, which is awesome. If you're making $60,000 a year and you have 20% growth on $1 million portfolio, you just more than tripled your income just in growth from the portfolio. Yeah. This is crazy, man. You know, you can't, and that's why I got so obsessed with it, because this is the sort of the, I was actually making less than this, a lot less than this when I first started. But then there's the other side of, I love it. Let's scale. Let's set some goals for, you know, 250, 500. Let's go crazy. So.
On the goal side of things, I mean, and this is you saying this is very much a self-made man. You, I don't know what your portfolio is now, something like $18 million or whatever. It's substantial. What about everyone else out there listening right now going, yeah, okay, this sounds good. But there's that doubt, that little voice that's like, nah, this isn't for you. This is for other people. Like, what would you say for anyone that wants to do it but doesn't really think it's possible?
I think the biggest thing, someone making $60,000, unless you're really young and you're like fresh out, but even then, how much can you realistically make out of your job? Because that's what I looked at.
Okay.
And I looked at, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was like, I couldn't see the way for myself to get to a really nice big, I've always loved nice cars, I've always loved nice boats, big houses, all the rest of it. But man, I was like, what I did, I was never going to make more than $100,000 a year. When I bought my first property, I was making, it was like $35,000 or something. I remember actually, it was $750 a week and after tax was $584 a week. That's how much I made at 19 when I bought my first property. Still remember it. And there was no path that I could think of that would get me to this different level. So like these people who might think, shit, like it's not for me. It's probably a bit too hard. No one can do it. Like, or I can't do it. It's really looking at it going, can you make a substantial amount, or can you make as much money to live the life you want to live following the work path that you're on right now? If the answer is no, take the risk and start with one deal. Mm-hmm. Because that for me, mate, I can tell you, now I'm in a fortunate position where I run, you know, a very successful business. I get to help a lot of people doing this. And this is my passion, mate. I absolutely love this. If I hadn't gone down this path, mate, I'd probably still be working for 100 grand a year, bust a mask, doing 50, 60 hours a week, kind of whatever the hell it was, doing something that I hated, never being able to buy exactly what I wanted or be able to, you know, go on great trips or anything. Mate, the last 2 years, my portfolio had about $6 million worth of growth. The value of the cash flow now is astronomical of where it's at. Man, if I hadn't done those little things in the very early stages, and like everyone has those self-doubt voices, right? Especially when things go wrong. The amount of, I've done a lot of builds through my career, like my portfolio building as well. Mate, there's always things that go wrong with builds. My second deal was a build. I bought land extremely cheap. It was cheap for a reason. And it cut away. There was a lot of headaches with that site. But man, I made 150 grand. When I was making 50 grand a year, I made 150 grand in 12 months doing that deal. Mm-hmm. And then within 3 years, that thing had doubled, you know, again. If I hadn't pulled the trigger and just, you know, had the tenacity to keep going through and the mental capacity to just push through and do it, never would have got there, never would have finished it, probably would have sold it, had a cry, all the rest of the stuff. Like, you need to push yourself through these things because it's not easy. But if you're making 60 grand a year and the most you'll ever make is 100 grand a year, if you want to build significant wealth, like this, it 100% is a path that can take you down that. Property, especially the compounding effect, that is the crazy thing. When you, even if you just bought 3 properties and $1 million and all you did was sit on that, if you want to buy a property in Sydney and all you make is 60 grand, 80, 100 grand, how are you ever going to buy a $2 million house that you really want in Sydney? You build a 3-property portfolio, you carry it through one cycle, and you focus on paying down the debt if that's what you want to do. You carry it through one cycle. You sell your 3 properties off that have gone from 1 mil to 2 mil. Bang, there's, even if you paid, you know, majority of debt off, you might be down to 1.5 mil to walk in and buy that. You could still be on 100 grand. Like, what you, does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, what you can do with it, man, is crazy. It's absolutely crazy how big, and obviously it depends on everyone that wants to do it. But that's, yeah, even from that sense of, someone doesn't know how to get into Sydney, there you go. I just explained how to get into the Sydney market, buy yourself a $2 million house in the next 10 years, you only make 100 grand a year. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazily possible what you can do with this.
I think it's very easy to dismiss it and to dismiss, like, especially like someone that's at your level now, it's easy to look at where you are now. But if we could like jump in a time machine and talk to Sam 10 years ago and Sam's got, I'm assuming, 2-3 properties 10 years ago, you'd be totally more relatable. But to me, it's like, it doesn't change the fact that what you're saying now comes with a wealth more knowledge than Sam 10 years ago. And it's like, you're still that person. You've just grown from that person from 10 years ago. I don't know. I don't want to turn this into me, because this is your story and the way that you would do it, mate.
But
I got to say, I looking back when I started this podcast, I think my portfolio was 2 regional properties. It was worth about $225,000, like the whole bloody thing. And it's just like the way that it's grown, and I'm still nowhere near your level, but it's like, I still look back now and I'm like, holy crap. And I'm only up to, what is it, 6 properties, 10 rentals. Like, it's just... it's incredible the way that this can start snowballing. And I know I'm nowhere near done. I'm pretty sure, I haven't asked you the question, but I'm pretty sure you're nowhere near done.
And nah, it's just, definitely not.
Imagine what the next 10 years are going to look like. But it all starts with this base. It all starts with number one and how you can grow it into number 2 and 3 and so on and so forth. So just in case you're listening to this and thinking, this has just gone totally too far, it's too big. Like, it's really not. It's just focus on 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's it, man. You start small. Don't think of this huge picture of what, I mean, that is possible, and dream for it, you know, dream for it, but build the foundations right. Mm. Build the foundations right, and then you can take it into whatever you want to take it into.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, I think we've probably run a little bit over time, and I need to change this last question. I've asked you this one like 3 times now. but now in 2020.
Is it a pizza or is it a different one?
That's the pizza one. Well, I hope it's changed, or is it still, because it's meat lovers most of the time, but Sam Gordon, right now in whatever it is, August 2022, what is now your favorite pizza?
Man, I'll tell you what, there's a couple of pizzas I've had since we last spoke, and meat lovers or pepperoni still tops the chart, right?
Yeah.
But highly recommendable. I'll put it highly recommended. Man, there's a lamb kofta pizza at my local one, and they put like this mad, like tzatziki drizzle or something. Mate, that's unreal. lamb kofta pizza.
Lamb kofta, okay.
And then there's a, Peking duck is the other one. There's this mad Peking duck one down at, you know, Crust? You know, the, is it Crust? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's from there. The Peking duck, mate. It's unreal. Yeah. Pepperoni still tops it, but they're highly, highly commended, those ones. Worth a try.
Oh, man, well, you definitely are a meat lover. I think if when we meet up eventually and actually have a pizza together, I don't think we're sharing one, man, because I'm...
I think might eat you if I just start gnawing into you if there's not enough meat there.
Well, it's definitely enough fat. I don't know about the meat, but anyway.
Dude, look,
thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, are there any kind of final words of wisdom or anything else? I know I have actually skipped over the action step just for anyone listening, because I think this entire show is really one big action step. But is there anything else you want to leave with our audience before we part ways, mate?
Mate, I think it was exactly what you were saying at the end there. Not about the pizzas, about the about the, like, you know, people that are thinking about it or whatever. You've got to have a crack. Property is, it's an amazing vehicle. And if you get it right, and it doesn't matter if you don't get it right in your first one. Yes, it may stick you back a tad, but like, if you put the effort in, you put the time in, or you hire someone that can help you with it, pull the trigger on the first one, have a crack at the first one. And it, honestly, especially, and I'm extremely relatable to this $60,000 and $60,000 income with $60,000 deposit. I started with a lot less than it, but it's like extremely relatable when I look at it. Cause a lot of the time as I was building my portfolio, like, I didn't even have that much to work with. So I understand building from a small base. It's 100% possible. It can change your life. If you work this thing and you learn how to do it, whether you do it yourself or whether you get a mentor to help you do this, it'll change your life. If you're never going to be some one of these people that's going to get yourself to some crazy big high income, this will get you to that point. This will be able to get you to the life of your dreams. And I literally guarantee you, put your mind to it and you work your ass off for it, it'll change your life.
Love it. Sam Gordon from Oz Property Scout, mate. Thank you so much for your time, dude. I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it, buddy. Always great to be on.
I'm just looking at my notes over this episode. The note that's standing out to me is lamb kofta pizza, Peking duck pizza. You know, for a guy that's a country boy at heart, he's certainly got some more fancy taste than his pizzas, that's for sure. But onto the property side of things, I feel like the thing that I really want to put a focus on here, because I think it's so easy to dismiss it, and it's why I really pulled Sam up partway through the episode, is that price point, that high twos, low threes. And again, if you're not on 60K a year, if you're on 80, 90, 100, 150, 200, whatever it is, well, then yeah, your price point changes. But if your price point does change, something that's really, really important to open up, though, is making sure that the yield and the serviceability side of things doesn't. Don't think, oh, it's all right, I'm on 150. I'll just buy an $800,000 one, but it's only got a 4% yield. But it's an $800,000 property, so it's better. It's a better choice. And look, maybe it is a better choice. Obviously, we can't talk specifics on stuff like this, but that 6% yield that Sam was talking about, whether you're on a lower income or whether you're even if you're on a higher income, if you don't have a really good yield, a strong yield in your portfolio, eventually you will cap out. You either need to start earning more money through your job or your business. Eventually, the banks, the broker's just going to say, like, sorry, that's it. You've reached the top of the staircase. You're not going any further from here. And if you do really enjoy this, so maybe you're not wanting to walk down the BA route, and you're still thinking, yeah, but it's really cheap, Todd. I live in Melbourne, and properties are all $1.5, $2 million here. Like, this, that's a deposit. That's not a whole house price. Something that I'll just tell you to do is a bit of an exercise, something fun to do. I personally enjoy this, but jump on realestate.com or domain, doesn't matter, whichever one you prefer using, and set your prices. Now, set your prices for 150 to 350 or even 400, just in case there's ones that are just overpriced and really they're actually worth 320, but vendors are still stuck in the past with what's going on price-wise. Don't set it to a specific suburb, set it to an entire state. Now, just to clarify, I'm not saying buy anywhere randomly, but what I'm saying is if you can look at the entire state, click the map view. So you're not looking through an entire list, because that's just going to take ages. You set this to map view, you can start having a look, whether you're doing Victoria, whether you're doing New South Wales, Perth, South Australia, Perth isn't a state, WA, Queensland, and start looking around and going, oh, actually, wait a second. Yeah, maybe if you're doing Queensland, you're like, oh, I live in Brisbane. oh, well, I can't really get it in right in Brizzy, but what about if I go up to Bundaberg? Yeah, I've never thought about Bundaberg. What's that area like? And you can start looking around. And it might be the trashiest area you never want to put your money in. But the point of this is, okay, so I'm not, just to make it really clear, I'm not specifically talking about areas to actually look at. What I'm talking about is understanding that these kinds of deals are out there. That, like, the worst thing you can do, in my opinion, actually, it's probably a bit harsh, but like, one of the worst things you can do is just have a closed off mindset. Like, it's so true. And I know, like, good mate of mine, Terry Reese, he'd probably be, oh yeah, that's a bit mamby pampy, Todd. He doesn't operate under this way. He's a very successful investor. I've got a lot of respect for that man. But it's something that I personally think is so important, that if you really have that growth mentality, that growth mindset, of even if you think, nah, it's not now, just go, well, have a look though. Let's see. Maybe there is other options out there. To me, that is really one of the keys to actually getting to the stage where you can have a multi-million dollar portfolio, a bigger portfolio. Because if you want, let's say, a multi-million dollar portfolio, you need to become the kind of person that has a multi-million dollar portfolio. And I can guarantee you, this one I'm not swaying from at all, every single one of those people that have built that have all got growth mindset. They've all got that, yeah, okay, well, what is a better way? How can I do it? I didn't think that was real, but is it? Let's look into it. And I think Sam has got so many different takeaways in that episode that, and like, seriously, listen to this one again, because you're going to pick up something else that you didn't the first time that you listened to this. But there's so many different takeaways for you guys to look into, to play with, and to really do everything you can to scale if that's what you want. And if you've liked this episode, and if you're listening on iTunes, I don't know why you can't actually leave reviews or rate on Spotify, but, and your iTunes, like, give us a rating. We'd love a 5-star. Tell us what you want to hear more of. Give us a review. Head on to pizzaandproperty.com. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, all the usual suspects. But that is enough from me today, guys. My name is Todd Sloan. This is the Pizza and Property Podcast. And as always, have yourself an amazing rest of the week. Stay awesome.